ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife. News breakdown.
Well, inflation figures out today. Prices increased in the first 3 months of the year by 1%, with the annual inflation rate now sitting at 3.6%. The figures for the March quarter were, however, higher than some economists had expected. The Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, though, says he sees promise in the figures.
So what we're seeing here is inflation, which is moderating in headline terms, not as fast as we would like, not as far as we would like yet, but certainly in annual headline terms, heading in the right direction.
But Shadow Treasurer Angus Taylor saw in today's inflation figures the need for spending restraint in next month's federal budget. Easy for him to say, you might think.
The test for this Treasurer and this Prime Minister is to bring down a budget that goes to the source of the problem, that puts downward pressure on inflation and interest rates by managing the government's budget just as households are having to manage their budget.
Yes, well, that last line is, in fact, a lie, as we know, because household budgets and the federal budget are not the same. Keeping a close eye on the challenges confronting the Treasurer as he prepares next month's budget is Ron Mizen, senior political reporter with the Australian Financial Review, who covers politics, economics, business and the law. Ron, good evening to you. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Good evening, Philip. Good to be back. And certainly I wish that my household budget would be able to maintain the continuous deficits without too
much concern. I wish that would start. Look, it just annoys me. It must annoy you too, and every seasoned watcher of these things, when, you know, politicians parrot this absolute nonsense that national government budgets are like household budgets and you have to balance it. That's just untrue.
They are very different.
It's just untrue. They've got a thing called a money printing machine, for example, called the Reserve Bank.
I had one of those too.
Exactly. No, I'm sorry if I seem intemperate, but it's annoying when they say these things. Look, you've been previewing the budget over the past few weeks. These inflation figures will add to the pressures on them. There's not a lot that the Treasurer can do, I guess, is there or not?
No, look, I think Treasurer Jim Chalmers took a pretty rosy-coloured view of it today, as he is wont to do as Treasurer. But ultimately, economists looked on these figures out today pretty dimly. Now, I know that you're delving into the detail with the inimitable Gareth Hutchins a little bit later on, so yes. I won't go into the full breakdown, but certainly the key data suggested that we do have stubborn homegrown inflation. Non-tradables, which is sort of another word that we use for, say, domestic price rises, was up about 5% through the year, while tradable inflation, which we sort of have as a metric for imported inflation, was only about 1%. And that's the largest gap in more than a decade. Now, that really does put pressure on Jim Chalmers as he's preparing the budget. He came back into Australia on Sunday from meetings of G20 finance ministers and the International Monetary Fund and World Bank in Washington. He was pretty downbeat, I have to say. You know, he was talking up the risks globally that we were seeing. But it's been a bit of a roller coaster for the Treasurer. I mean, the following day we had economists out saying they were sceptical of his downbeat assessment of the budget. We had Chris Richardson saying the clearest sign of the seasons are changing is not the colour of the leaves here in Canberra, but the tone of the Treasurer, and that growth will actually be better than forecast, and so will the budget bottom line. But then the Bureau of Statistics today really ramming home the difficulty for Treasurer Chalmers. You know, he wants to provide cost of living relief. He wants to make key investments in the economy. But at the same time, he needs to be very careful about not stoking inflation and further delaying interest rate cuts, which investors this week have already pushed back out into next year.
Yes, exactly. The real cost of living relief that he's going to offer in the budget has already been offered, hasn't it, in terms of the tax cuts? He can't really do much more.
That's the centrepiece, he calls it. You know, I think that's the thing that people will be feeling effectively from the first week of the new financial year. There is, I mean, we did a fairly substantive survey of economists earlier.
You surveyed
this year.
20 leading economists about what might be the best strategy in the budget. What did you get 20 different opinions?
Well, no, they were, in a rare occasion, perhaps all fairly uniform. And nine called for a contractionary or slightly contractionary budget. Now, that's where you sort of effectively take money out of the economy with your policy decisions. Eight called for a neutral stance. Two fell somewhere in between. And just one said that there was scope to basically increase spending. Now, that's not to say that there's not capacity to provide some more cost of living support for people. There is a view that there are certain ways that you can do it if they structurally decrease inflation, or, for example, if they're offset by savings elsewhere. But the other big thing for Jim Chalmers is, you know, Anthony Albanese has been out. He really wants to promote the Made in Australia Act. They want to get money out the door on those investments. Mm. And the Treasurer has been very clear that we perhaps shouldn't expect to see that in the next 12 to 24 months, because he's very conscious of not wanting to put pressure on inflation.
Maybe some relief for energy costs, do you think? Chalmers seems to be saying it's actually anti-inflationary, which might be right.
No, that's an interesting debate that I won't bore your listeners with. But look, yeah, energy bill relief that was introduced a little while back, and also rent assistance. Now, in purely what we call mechanical terms, the energy bill relief actually decreases inflation. So the ABS in its figures today said that electricity prices had risen by 3.9% since June 2023. Now, if the government's relief wasn't in place, electricity prices would have actually increased by 17% over that period. So in a mechanical sense, it reduces inflation, and that's a good thing. Now, there's a big debate about whether you're effectively it just pushes money out elsewhere, but that's the kind of thing economists say could be in the budget. And I think there is a growing expectation that energy bill relief will be there. There's also a big question as well, particularly as there's pressure coming from the Greens and other parties even, that maybe we'll see some relief on HEX indexation.
All right. Look, on to other matters. The ongoing war between X, known as Twitter, and the federal government. I mean, this is over the platform's refusal to comply with the government's directive to take down violent videos, in particular videos of that stabbing incident at the Sydney church last week. The war continues. Elon Musk has ridiculed the government's efforts to have the video blocked globally. This is Elon Musk arguing it amounts to censorship and efforts to control the internet. Claire O'Neill, the Home Affairs Minister, has stepped up here and argues that the company is displaying disgraceful behaviour and that your stoush shows greater regulation of social media companies is needed.
We're not seeing a skerrick of responsibility taken by these companies. Instead, we're seeing megalomaniacs like Elon Musk going to court to fight for the right to show terrorist content, alleged terrorist content, on his platform. And I just think this tells us everything we need to know. There is no way that these social media platforms are going to do the right thing voluntarily.
Well, Elon Musk has also described Tasmanian Senator Jackie Lambie as, quote, an enemy of the Australian people, no less, after she deleted her account on his social media platform X. Senator Lambie has also encouraged other Australian politicians to get off the platform because of his refusal to block a video of a stabbing at a Sydney church. Well, if you were leaving X, I suppose, you wouldn't be the first, judging by the way the platform has declined. But here she is.
The power that man has because of that platform that he's on, it's got to stop. It has absolutely got to stop. But leaving that out for our kids to see, for people that were family and friends out there, and just letting that run on there, once again, that bloke has no conscience. He's an absolute frigging disgrace.
Ron, I'm going to bet you whatever you want. Elon Musk has got no idea who Jackie Lambie is.
I think he has no clue, and I think he's taking on a force of nature, frankly. I mean, if I had to put my bet on Elon Musk or Jackie Lambie, I mean, it's difficult, but I'd probably put it on Jackie. The most bizarre thing about this, I think, is the fact that this man runs Twitter, he runs Tesla, he's sending rockets into space, he's got a lot on his plate.
How can he be worried about this thing?
Well, he's picking a fight with Australian politicians on his own platform.
Well, not even a government politician. He's picking a fight with an independent from Tasmania.
Exactly. Now, look, I mean, there is a possibility that perhaps he and others view this as the thin end of the wedge. Australia has always been at the forefront of kind of regulating social media platforms. The News Media Bargaining Code is the sort of good example of that. Other countries sought to implement that, and that cost them a lot of money. So perhaps Elon sees this as a concern that if Australia moves first and takes this kind of action, then other countries will do likewise. Right. There's been an interesting brawl in the courts this week, including this afternoon. You know, Elon Musk's fighting the eSafety Commissioner, trying to fend off, you know, these requirements that they take down a whole bunch of this video, this horrific video of the priest being stabbed. Now, you know, he's fighting that, refusing to do so. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has, you know, basically said that this guy's being driven by ego. And Jim Chalmers said that people should be filthy. Stephen Jones said it was a playground for criminals and cranks. You know, they're really ramping up the rhetoric. The courts this afternoon basically decided to continue the emergency injunction that allowed, until May 10. This is the fight between the two to stop that video from being circulated. But in a peculiar sort of development late today, the firebrand TikTok bishop, Mari Emmanuel, the man who was attacked, has said that he's happy for the video to stay up.
I want to be cynical about this, Ron, but he's probably thinking, I've never had as much publicity in my life.
Perhaps. Mm. I mean, there are legitimate questions over the effectiveness of these laws being raised now, though, and whether that should be expanded, and I suspect that's what has X and Elon a bit worried.
Yeah. Bizarre, quite frankly. Look,
on
a much more serious matter and concerning matter too, Ron, 11 more women have died violently this year compared to the same time last year. The death of childcare worker Molly Ticehurst in Forbes in regional New South Wales has focused attention fairly and squarely on the safety of women. And a lot of people are just sick and tired of the fact that nothing seems to get done. She was allegedly killed by her former partner, becoming the 25th woman this year to die from gender-based violence, according to data analysis from an organisation morbidly entitled Counting Dead Women. The Federal Minister for Women, Katie Gallagher, has called the prevalence for violence against women in Australia a crisis, and she says too many women feel unsafe.
This is a crisis in this country and women don't feel safe. You know, when we see it's not safe to go out for a run, go shopping, you take action against violent perpetrators, you do all the right things and we still have these cases.
Yeah, well, she's right. I mean, what's to be done? I mean, there are things to be done and nobody seems to want to do them. Molly's death has prompted calls for a review into New South Wales's bail legislation. Although many critics say we don't need a review, there are already things you could be doing. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says the government will look at measures to curb rates of violence against women. It all sounds, Ron, a bit like blah, 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 doesn't it? I mean, the focus is on women's safety with these stats and things need to change. They need to change now, not after reviews in months' time, which will inevitably be shelved like all the others.
I mean, we've been talking about this for quite a long time.
Exactly.
Now. And I mean, the government has an intimate partner homicide register, a bit more of a technical term, that will be rolled out mid this year that tracks the rates of death more frequently. But I mean, that's simply going to tell us what I think every woman innately already knows, that this is a massive issue and many of them continue to feel unsafe. I thought it was interesting that, you know, we had the ASIO. Mike Burgess, ASIO boss Mike Burgess, and the AFP Commissioner Kershaw out this week, and they were asked the question of, well, you know, why is it that the attack that we saw in against the priest in Sydney was immediately, or not immediately, but very quickly labelled a terrorist incident for ideological reasons. And when we had the situation in Bondi, the individual who, you know, clearly was ideologically driven, hatred of women, and was specifically attacking women, that couldn't fall in within that category. And they kind of skirted that question and I think probably left more questions. But Attorney General Mark Dreyfus gave a speech earlier this week where I thought he made the salient point that, you know, to create he said, to create lasting change, that women cannot be expected to solve this problem themselves. And we often see that a lot of these advocates in this space are victims, and effectively we're asking them to relive this experience over and over and over again in order to advocate. And he says it's time for men to step up. It's our responsibility to educate ourselves, our sons, our colleagues, our friends, and that's an important step to prevention. And I think he's probably right. I have a young son, and, you know, these are conversations that we, as, you know, as we get older with our family, you've got to have this as part of a broader conversation, as with you do with many other parts of their lives that they'll experience, that we have to have to be honest and upfront about.
Yep, indeed. As well as take some immediate steps to put trackers and conditions and reporting conditions and greater presumptions against bail, all of these things, which are all available right now. If a person is direct, you know, I mean, we put ankle bracelets on serious offenders. We don't seem to do it with domestic violence offenders. And quite frankly, a lot of people think we don't understand why. Look, just finally, Ron, Rhys Kershaw, Commissioner of the Australian Federal Police, and Mike Burgess, the ASIO Director General, addressed the National Press Club of Australia at lunchtime today. What did they have to say?
Yeah, look, this sort of dovetails into the broader question around social media giants and their behaviour. We basically had them saying that the increasing prevalence of encrypted apps or encrypted conversation apps like WhatsApp, like Signal, like the Facebook Messenger app now, were being used by organisations to enable crime, to encourage vilification of Muslims and Jews and LGBTQI communities. And it was increasingly frustrating law enforcement efforts. And they were out saying that they wanted these large tech giants to engage more proactively and to help them be able to get inside of this. Looking at the way that these tech giants have behaved in recent times, I don't like their chances. They, of course, do have laws or that are available to them, which they haven't used pretty extensively, which was highlighted at the press club. But they were also out today, jumping on the broader issue of Twitter, basically saying that, these people were acting appallingly and they needed to pull their heads in. Obviously, as interestingly enough, purely coinciding with that press club speech, we had those counter-terrorism raids in Sydney, which flowed from the stabbing in southwestern Sydney, where we had 7 teenage boys arrested. The New South Wales Police came out and basically said that they had been monitoring these people and considered them a unacceptable risk. And so they swooped this morning, 400 officers across 13 properties, and made those arrests. So no doubt that would link into what ASIO and the AFP are asking for, is we need to be able to monitor them far more closely.
Sure. All right. Ron, always great to talk. Thank you.
Thanks, Philip. Have a good evening.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.